Welcome to Overtures. Only days after this episode, I ran into my guest at work, as he just booked a new show. Go see my guest, Steven, surprisingly not operating a single puppet, in the Sesame Street musical running off Broadway. Congratulations, Steven. All links are in the show notes. Take your seats. We'll be starting shortly. Hello there, everyone. Hi. Welcome to Overtures. I hope everyone's having a good Wednesday. We're going to go ahead and get started today. Welcome to episode 40 of Overtures. My guest today has spent the last 10 years traveling North America as an actor, puppeteer, and teaching artist. Hometown area credits include Walnut Street Theater, Hedgerow, Media Theater, and Christopher in The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime with Bloomsburg Theater Ensemble. Stephen has performed around the country with Barter Theater, The Rev, the national tour of A Christmas Carol, and aboard Disney Cruise Line. He recently finished a run of SpongeBob the Musical with Arizona Broadway Theater and is home in New York, releasing the second season of his Theater for Young Audiences podcast, Pipe and Drape, at Pipe and Drape Stories. My guest and I have not met until today, but we have several mutuals due to his most recent contract at Arizona Broadway Theater, so I'm super stoked to chat and get to know him. This is Stephen Falla.
Hi.
How are you?
good. Really good. Thank you for having me on here today.
Absolutely. So how do we know each other? We don't, but we have several mutuals from your most recent contract. So you worked with three former classmates of mine, Ross Coughlin, Michael Mutkowski, and then a former guest of the show as well, Steven C. Callis.
Yeah. And we were all roommates in when we were working down in Phoenix.
Oh, that's so fun.
SpongeBob. Yeah. And I haven't met any of them before. And so I just kind of showed up and was like, hello, these are your people. And they're all from Wagner. And it's like, great. I love Wagner. Let's go.
You're like, let's do it. Amazing. Yeah. And how was SpongeBob? That looked like it was such a fun run and that you guys had an absolute blast.
It was everything, everywhere, all at once. I've never seen that movie, but like it really, it's like every genre of music and dance and anything that can happen on stage did.
Truly. Yeah. Because it looked like you were one of the electric skates too, right?
Yeah. So I was skates in the second act and then the like Buster track throughout the rest of the show. Which was fun. I haven't roller skated on stage since I was 12 in like doing middle school Schoolhouse Rock Live. So I was like, oh, I know how to do that. Great.
You're like, amazing. I got this. And then it's like, oh, God, I haven't done this in so many years.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. And how did the run itself go? Did you have really, really excited audiences and kids so excited to see the show?
Yes. I mean, like I grew up, like SpongeBob came out when I was like 8.
Yeah.
And as like a teaching artist, like kids have talked to me about SpongeBob thinking that I don't know what it is. I'm like,
right.
Oh no, I know what SpongeBob is. and that rang true throughout this run where we have like millennials coming in to see it and then their kids coming in to see it. And everyone right. loves it equally. Having, Patchy at the top of act 2 saying like, are you ready? And then everyone in the audience going, aye, aye, captain. I'm like, oh, great. Good.
Yeah. That just like, if anything else, if you were tired before that run, I'm sure the second like you hear the crowd like saying that back to you, you're like, oh, okay. Nope. I got the energy I need. We're good to go.
Yeah.
It was. Oh my gosh. Well, I was going to say, and I feel like with a show like SpongeBob, there really isn't any downtime. And like backstage, everyone's either running on or off about to do something, especially for the ensemble.
Yeah. And I haven't been in the ensemble of too many things.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I've had experiences where like I go on and I do my bit and I'm off stage for like 35 minutes.
Right.
Whereas this was like nonstop. I'm either on stage or like backstage changing a costume. Like there wasn't a break.
Yeah. Just a marathon.
Yeah. So that it was kind of like a wild back and forth as far as like tracking and figuring out like, okay, right. I'm pitching this part here. Let's go. and it's, you know, it's a new musical. So everything is like sung up in the stratosphere, which is like different for
right.
me. But you know, someone tells you to do it and you just got to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you and I also have some other mutuals, either involved with Villanova, where I went to grad school, or some other Wagner friends of mine who were involved with Upper Darby Summer Stage. So am I correct in assuming that you are from the Philly mainline area?
Yeah, I did. I grew up doing Upper Darby Summer Stage. And yeah, a number of those friends went to Wagner and yeah. Villanova for various things. Yeah. And I've worked with them either at Summer Stage or elsewhere.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing to see the insane community that has come out of Upper Darby Summer Stage. As someone who really didn't know what it was until like I went to college and heard other Wagner people talking about it, I was like, oh, wow. Like, it's amazing how it developed such a community. And even talking to Chris Monaco last episode, getting to talk about Upper Darby Summer Stage too. Such a wonderful way of just like building a theatrical community. But I guess this ties into sort of the beginning of this interview and this show. So the first question is, how did you first get started in theater?
My mom took me to see the Nutcracker before I could even like remember anything. but I knew at some point when I was like two or three, I saw a production of the Nutcracker in the Round, and that became a tradition for us. So I would go with my mom to see Nutcracker at various places. And I was like, I want to do that. And so I wanted to be a dancer first. Mm. And I was in ballet like multiple times a week until I was 12. I started doing theater when I was in elementary school too. And I was like, oh, I like being able to talk. And so it was, there was never a time where this wasn't a part of my life or wasn't something that I was going to do. Like it was, my parents, they like built a stage for me in my basement that was up until like I was a sophomore in high school.
I love that.
Yeah. And so my friends and I, would like make plays in my basement with like Fisher Price furniture and old like tablecloths. And we would like lip sync to Madonna and NSYNC and create these narratives. And it was always something theatrical, that or like we were dressing up like and being spies in the neighborhood, which is kind of theater too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was really through dance and my parents full out supporting this that I got involved with it professionally.
That's so awesome. Very, in terms of the spy thing running around the neighborhood, very like live action role play, like street theater, that kind of thing. But it's funny that you say that like starting from a very young age, you were like creating jukebox musicals as like little kids, you know, like you're fully involved in that.
Oh yeah. I don't even know if I knew that that was like a thing that happened right on Broadway. I was just like, well, this is what we're doing. And then we did it. And so, yeah. I don't know, maybe we joke about reviving them. Like, well, what if we took Broken Toe to Broadway?
I love that they still, like, you guys still remember the names of them and, like, the plot lines, too.
My best friend, Mel Schaefer, and I, like, will still bring up moments from the shows randomly in conversation. And we know that people, like, don't know what we're talking about. It's like, it's fine, it's not for you.
You know, this is an us thing, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. And you've got started at such a young and early age. So I also wonder, I always ask on this podcast, what was like your overture moment or like light bulb moment of like, oh, but like, this is what I want to do for a career.
I like don't even remember. And I know that's terrible because it's
No, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, a bunch of people have that, or like some people are like, I didn't have one. It was a given from the beginning. So it's totally okay and understandable if you don't have one. So of course you're an actor and you do a lot of musical theater, but seeing on your sizzle reel, you do a little bit of everything.
Yes. and it's funny that you say that because I've been like going through, I have like 20 different versions of my resume where I'm like trying to spin myself a different way. So like if you want like a chorus boy here, but if you want a puppeteer, here's some of this.
Yeah.
And so as far as like my type and what I do, like it truly depends on the day and what you want. And so sometimes I feel like I walk into a room and people don't know what to do with me because it's like, oh, well, you could be little boy, but maybe not. You could be puppets, but like dancing. I don't know. And so, I mean, the thing that I love to do that I don't do very often is like darker stuff for adults. I mean, like, to put it in perspective, like, in college, like, I was like, I'm going to do that monologue from The Goat or Who is Sylvia by Edward Albee. Like, but then I end up also doing a lot of children's theater. And so while it's like, I don't say like, oh, I'm a children's theater actor. It's just, it's easier for me to group things together in that category than anything else. Cause it's like, well, I do plays. So one time I accompanied a show and
you're like, roll it all together. And I feel like a lot of like youth children's theater is that way, where it's like, okay, I can use a little bit of everything I have because the shows are so like wacky and fun, or like constantly everyone's jumping into different roles, that like, it's nice when you're someone with multiple hats, that it's like, okay, youth theater is a place where I can use as many of them as possible.
Yeah. And I think with a lot of TYA, in my experience, there's looser interpretations as far as text and staging. Whereas, you know, if I'm walking like West Side Story, or even like this past version of SpongeBob, it's like, we have 2 weeks and the show is a million years long, and there's a way that it's done, and we're just going to do it that way because there's no time.
Right.
So I feel like in doing TYA, there's a lot more room for creativity and using these random skills in there.
So it's like drawing, it's drawing from like when you were a kid, you know, it's getting that opportunity to be like, oh, I have like this prop over here. Let's throw it in, see if it's funny. And so I also noticed in your sizzle reel, there's some like film and sketch work in there. So I'm curious, what are some differences for you when approaching like theatrical versus camera work?
So the film work that I did, one of them was one of the guys was something I had done almost 10 years ago when I was in Philadelphia, and it was a very big sort of Will and Grace inspired comedy, which is very theatrical. So it's like, great, I know where this lives. Just make sure it fits in the frame of the camera.
Yes.
whereas when I did the Philadelphia, The Great Experiment, that's a docuseries on 6ABC. That's very just reenactment based. And it's just like, okay, live in this world, which I love. Temple was very Uta Hagen heavy in their training. And so it's, I don't know, for anyone listening, it's a lot of the exercises are like, just go live in that world and be regular about it. Yeah. So like, I love like keeping, of course, like that clip is me being dramatic and ripping stuff up. I love also just kind of existing in a world at ease and keeping things smaller. I'm like, well, the camera will get it, so it's fine. So it's just a matter of how I'm playing.
It's a lot of like reframing for your mind as an actor, being like, okay, is this something that I can do like I would on stage for something that's more theatrical, like a Will and Grace-esque thing, or like would like theatrically ripping something up be way too big for the camera? And it takes a lot of practice to be like, oh, right. I don't like, once you start seeing the pictures, like from when you're on camera, you're like, oh, like you can see that small of things. And I know for me, that was a huge learning experience in starting to do like on camera work. So I do have an Instagram question, and I have three, all from the same person. And I have a feeling this person knows you a bit better than I do. So this first question from @Bassoon08, have you ever done any improv or street theater?
So Bassoon08 is Melanie Schaefer, who was my spy partner and co-creator of my basement plays. Hi, Mel.
I love that.
you can say that my first street theater partner was Bassoon08, Mel Schaefer, where we would go around the neighborhood dressed up using our spy aliases, taking notes on people. So I mean, that's the closest thing I've done to street theater. And I did some work for the Swedish Cottage Marionette Theater last year, where we took two of our shows out to parks in all five boroughs of New York. And so that was kind of street theater, because it was theater in public, but it wasn't as spontaneous or there's some things happening downtown where you like walk through and theater's happening. I've never done anything like that, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, no, it's like the ultimate improv game. And
and then improv, again, that's how we made up our plays in the basement. It was a lot of improvisation, making up scenarios and finding what worked. And since we were like 8 years old, we could just remember exactly what we said and do it every time in the many rehearsals we had. Yes. And then I did have actual like improv training. I did an apprenticeship at Barter Theater in Virginia when I was like 22. And my project for my apprenticeship was long form solo improv. And so I'm trained in, you know, creating like different types of pieces alone based off of a couple of words. And it's something that I will use in character work in my head or when doing any sort of like ensemble far back kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I haven't done any sort of like Second City like classes or performances or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, it long form improv is incredibly difficult. So props to you for, I guess, clinging on to that and being like, oh yeah, I can do that. Cause I've only seen like a few variations of it here and there. And I'm just blown away every single time. Like on Netflix, there's Middleditch and Schwartz, and yes. They do long form, and it's just the two of them. And like the amount of characters and like wacky situations they get themselves into and try and pull themselves back out of is crazy. So I can't even imagine doing that in a solo version, trying to create this narrative for yourself and the, I'm sure, multiple characters you end up playing as well.
God, it was when I had to do my final showing, I was convinced I was going to pass away that day. And it was in front of like so many people that I loved and had grown to know while working down there.
Like,
and
I can't mess this up.
and then it happened and I was like, oh, I did it. Okay, I'll do that again. Like, once you do it, then you're like, oh.
You're like, oh, okay, I have the ability to do this and not pass away. So yeah. I guess I can do it. but in talking about other things that you do, you also have a lot of experience with puppetry. How did you get into puppetry?
My drama director in high school is a puppeteer. He now works. Mm-hmm. He just won an Emmy working for Jim Henson.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so David Valentine put a puppet into my hand in high school. I was doing Peter Pan, and instead of installing like a big flying rig, he created like Bunraku style puppets for us to use. And so it was me and another actor puppeteer that were doing like my flying sequences together. So it started with that. And then I went to college and ended up doing some stuff in the Philadelphia Young Playwrights Festival. Mm-hmm. And that had some puppetry in it where I was a full posse, but it was two hats on sticks. and then it just snowballed into like the Rev Heard. I did puppetry and I did some for them. And then it just like one day I like turned around and someone was like, we're professional puppeteers. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm like, oh, I guess I am.
And that was recent.
It was like, I was working for Disney at this point. And I was in a giant horse and I'm like, oh, I guess I'm a puppeteer. Like, it's not just, this isn't just screwing around. For real.
Yeah, no, I feel like that's definitely, of other puppeteers that I've talked to, I feel like it's definitely something they've like stumbled into and just like been like, oh, that's fun. I'll keep doing more of that. And then they go, oh, I guess I like do this. So that's so fun to hear that similar experience. I'm curious, like what makes puppetry so different from other mediums of performance for you?
I find it exciting because you are channeling all your energy into something else that you are physically connected to. And so I do a lot of like full body puppetry where either I'm in like a big thing, like a horse or a giant dog, or it's like a piece of me is, again, a dog, but like the rest of my body is somehow still dog kind of. It's getting the whole show, like feeling it in yourself and then some, getting it into this thing. And this is what everyone's looking at. Mm. And I don't know why, but that is just thrilling to me. And so, and I think almost all of the puppetry I've done, I'm visible while I'm working the puppet, and that's my preference.
Yeah.
To be doing that. I've had experience where I'm like under a snow mound and Olaf is like doing his thing, but like I love to be like, and it's me, you know.
Yeah. It's like you're focusing on the puppet, but like you can look at me if you want to. Like I know I personally get so much enjoyment watching both the puppet and the puppeteer, because I can see how much of themselves they're putting into the puppet. So I can totally understand that. Do you have any favorite puppets you've made and or used?
I have never built a puppet.
I
still like can't believe I haven't done this. Like my mom's an artist and she has like taught art forever. And so she has like made so many like things, and she's like made like puppets with like kids. And for some reason I've just not picked up on that. I don't know why. And I've not done it myself. But favorite puppets that I've used, I did a production of Where the Red Fern Grows a while back, and a bit of that was in that sizzle reel where it was like a dog on my hand and then I'm holding the leash on him, because it was old Dan and he's like all over the place, so he needs a leash. And so I loved being able to control the puppet, and they were built specifically like for us for this show, and controlling the eyes. But the holding the leash was kind of a very different weird thing that like just happened, and we didn't really talk about it until like dress rehearsal, where like the leash was like me as the puppeteer, like controlling like the dog, like, hey, don't get too crazy. But it also was kind of his tail at the same time, and
that's so funny.
Communicated the tension that he was holding in his body. So like, you know, if there's a raccoon running around, like you can see how he's feeling based on how I'm holding this.
Right.
So it walked this weird line of like literal and like not, that is something that can only happen on stage. Which is what I love. So I really loved like working with old Dan like that.
That's so cool. And like, just like that duplicity you were just talking about, it's like, I'm the one operating the puppet, but because you're putting all this life into that puppet, suddenly the leash kind of becomes its own character at the same time and can reveal so much, that I think that's what makes puppetry so cool and so important. I do have a few questions from the chat currently, which is exciting.
Oh, wow.
I'm not familiar with this, but ESM says, do the TikTok trend of 5 things you wouldn't do as a puppeteer. I'm not familiar with this, but perhaps you are.
I don't know. I'm not on TikTok.
That's okay.
I was asked to be a part of a TikTok in SpongeBob because a lot of my cast members are 19 and have TikTok. And like, you're going to have to help me with this. And
you're like, just tell me what to do, I guess.
Things that I wouldn't do as a puppeteer. I mean, there's like the obvious stuff, like don't stop breathing, like into the puppet, you know, watch, don't split your focus. But I know there's like the silly things like don't stick like sticky hands into the puppet.
Ooh, yeah, I could imagine that would be like a ooh.
I've had some rehearsal puppets where I'm like, is this glue in here? What is this?
You're like, I don't want to know what this is, but I am scared of the answer. No, I think those are some good ones. And then I'm trying to decide whether to ask this one now. Might as well while I'm already looking at it. This one also by the same person. What's some of the moments that really showed you the kind of performer you feel you really are? It's a really sweet question.
Oh. This is interesting. Just because I've done like a variety of genre, and I feel at times that I have been pigeonholed as into just performing for kids, which I love doing, and I think it's so important. But at the same time, I think in doing that, there's a lot of material that is not for kids. It's either like too advanced and too much of it goes over their head for it to be considered like family appropriate. So I did a production of Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And that was a piece where I saw it on Broadway back when it was on Broadway. And I was like, oh my God, I have to do this show. Mm-hmm. I've never like seen a character that I've connected with so much. And so that was something that was in the back of my mind. I'm like, okay, well, it's going to tour, and then regionally, you know, I'll keep an eye out for it. And the opportunity came up by chance. I almost didn't click on the listing.
Oh my gosh.
And in doing it, it was, it's a very physical show, which, like, you know, love doing physical theater. And there are so many comedic bits in it where it's like, Christopher will say something and he doesn't realize it's funny. And it is. And, like, I kind of jive with that sense of humor.
Yeah.
And it gets really, really dark really quickly. Yeah. And those are all, it's all that kind of stuff is what I love to do and would love to do more of. And so I would say, working on that, and creating that piece with that, it was like, I was a guest artist at this residence theater. So joining that group, and it was like the first time that I felt very, comfortable in like creating a show where I felt like I belong, and this is like, I deserve to be here. I've walked into jobs where I'm like, I'm going to get fired. Imposter syndrome. They're going to find me out.
Yeah.
This is the first time where I walked in and I was like, I know what this is. Here, let's go. And so I think that's a good example, I guess, of something that showcases who I am and what I do.
That's one amazing question that segued perfectly into a topic that I definitely wanted to talk about. But that sounds like that was such an amazingly wonderful experience for you. And I'm so glad you got to have that. And not only that, but we have a clip of you in it. So we're going to watch that really quick, just so that people can get a taste of what that production was like.
You know that you are looking at stars which are hundreds and thousands of light years away from you. And some of those stars don't exist anymore because the light has taken so long to get to us that they're already dead, or they've already exploded and collapsed into red dwarfs. And that makes you seem very small. And if you have difficult things in your life, it's nice to think that they are what is called negligible, which means that you don't have to take them into account when you're calculating something.
I push the bed up against the door in case Father tries to come into the room. Sometimes he tries to talk to me through the door. Don't answer him. Sometimes he just sits outside the door quietly for a long time. Can I come and live in your house so I'll have room to put all my things and I won't have to share the toilet with strangers?
Such amazing acting of it. I've seen a production of it that was like trying to get there, but just wasn't quite there. But like just seeing these clips, I'm like, it's such a hard show. And it's wonderful that you guys got to put on such an amazing production of it. What were some of the most exciting and challenging parts for you?
I think the definitely most exciting, there were so many pieces of me in it. That I have tried to hide for a while. I mean, I physically, we were just trying to figure out some things that Christopher can do. And I grew up playing with my ears and sucking on my tongue. And it's a habit that I had through high school.
Yeah.
And so we were in rehearsal and we're talking about some of his physicality. And I was like, okay, time to be vulnerable. I was like, look, there is this like thing that I used to do. I don't know if this is something we can incorporate or whatever. And then they're like, yes. And so that became part of who he was. Creating this staging with that group and figuring out like, okay, how are we going to tell this based on who we are and what we can do? We worked with designer Jorg Cosino, who's a Philadelphia-based projection designer. And so we had a grant from the National Endowment of the Arts, And that paid for like him, the equipment and the software to do these projections. And so I grew up being a dramaturg at Summer Stage and did some in high school too. And so the images that were used for our setting were like actually the places like that exist. And like, oh my God, I love this so much. And then Jorg would come to rehearsals and then watch our staging, and he built like Christopher's walking patterns that I had come up with into the projections so that like there's this like red dot that like that is me walking. And it was just really cool to like work together like on a tech aspect like that.
Yeah.
It was definitely, I mean, it's a long show. It's 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. And like Christopher doesn't stop moving, which I love not stop moving, like, you know, TYN ensemble, love it. But I remember for our design run, it would be the first time that we were running the whole thing. And so we got through act one and it ends like with Christopher, like throwing an enormous fit and like screaming and whatever. And then like we went on a tangent and I like took my water and went into another room alone and I was shaking and I was like, I'm going to have to do this 8 times a week. Okay. And it was great and it was wonderful, but it was like, okay, this is a different kind of focus than I've ever had before.
Yeah. And on a show that is where you're playing a part that is so much a part of you, but then also trying to find those moments for self-care as an actor to be like, okay, that was this character, but I need to take care of myself coming out of a moment like that, that's so vulnerable and so hard. It's just another level of like actor self-care that sometimes people don't realize has to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And we were skipping through a little bit of what I had written down because Curious Incident came up, so I wanted to talk about it. But going back a little bit, also, you've been on tour as well. Specifically, I had noted, I saw in the clip you had done Paw Patrol Live. And it's fun because I talked to another friend of mine on Overtures being on the Baby Shark National Tour. So what was that experience of being in a touring production geared for kids?
So I had done a lot of like TYA tours before then. Like I had done like a TheaterWorks tour where, you know, you're putting up your own set and you're, you know, I was on wardrobe. So I was like doing laundry every couple of days. And I worked for like a touring component for the Rev where it was like the same kind of deal. And you're learning how to drive like a big white van and dealing with school administration, getting your stuff in there and safety wise. Yeah. With Paw Patrol, it was the first time I didn't have to set up my own set for a TYA tour. And I was like, oh my God. And I like, I felt so awful because like we would like hang out with our crew and like they were like on our bus. We were so like intermingled and like we wouldn't see them. And like we would have time off to just like go around the city and they would be like setting up an arena show. And I'm like, has like won anything? So I was like bringing in cookies whenever I could. I'm like, I'm sorry. Because I'm not allowed to touch anything.
Yeah.
And in a show like that, I just had like some surgery done. And so like, I couldn't like audition in person. So I just like threw them a video and got it. And I was like, okay. And for that, Paw Patrol Live is done. There aren't like full body mascot costumes. So like all the vocals are live. Like you're seeing the puppeteers, like it's kind of like a centaur looking situation, the way I'm sticking out of the puppet. That show, that was probably the hardest on my body for any show.
Those are big puppets.
It's Rubble is 65 pounds. So he's a lot. And like, I like had very skinny legs for a long time. And so like, I was like, how am I going to do? So that show like really changed my thighs forever. And like my hips and back are still weird from that puppet, but I'm so grateful. They had during the rehearsal process, physical therapists come in to teach us how to like roll out and stretch properly.
Oh, perfect.
Which was like great. And that's something that we incorporated into like our, like we warm up as a group every day. Doing that and being on a bus is particularly like your hips can get pretty tight sitting on a bus for an extended period of time. And we had days where we would fly from location to location. But there was a lot of bus time. And so it was, really making sure that like we were getting up and moving when we could. I'm very, whenever I get to a new tour stop, I love to explore immediately. So like my friend Diane and I, we would like plan our, like what we're doing. Like we're on the bus, like we were on two different buses. Cause like I was on the social bus, she was on the quiet bus. And I'm like sending her links. Like we have to go here. I want to eat this. And like, we're figuring out where we're going. Cause like we have to get up and move. We just have to. And so we would do that between shows. I would still like lift and work out like in the hotel gyms even though like the show itself like was absolutely a workout, we would get to that last scene where it's like four songs in a row. It's 11 minutes. We called it each scene, and it's a nightmare. And every time I was like, this is going to be the day that they're going to have to call hold because I have fallen over and I have to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And I never did. But it would work me out in certain ways, but there are other ways where it wouldn't. So I would have to go to the gym and just keep up so I'm not like suddenly like off balance.
Yeah, evening everything out in the body.
Oh yeah. But that was really cool, I think, to perform in an arena, especially someone who grew up, like, I have done musicals my whole life, and I guess I'll keep doing them, but I never really considered myself a singer. Mm-hmm. And so, like, having, like, a big microphone on my face and having to, like, sing for, like, thousands of people at once, I was like, okay. And then, like, hearing it reverb, like, back to me, it was really just coming to face, like, this is your singing voice, just get used to it. And I did. So I think that was a very big learning experience with that, in addition to figuring out how to keep my body from not falling apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had experience with some other tours. Am I not mistaken?
Yeah. So I had toured with The Rev and Theater Works. And then the Red Fern production I did a statewide tour after a run in Lexington. And so those were all like setting up your own sets and things. Some of those places like Theater Works, I was living in Harlem at the time. And we would have weeks where we were just running out and coming back to New York. So I was going, I'm going to go see Fiddler tonight or whatever. Yeah. and then Lexington, kind of the same deal where we would have runouts and we would come back and it was October. So I was doing like seeing Rocky Horror and doing festive stuff. the Rev, it was kind of the same deal where you're in and out. But I did the tour of A Christmas Carol. And that was, you know, my first jumping around place to place kind of tour.
Right.
And that was really cool. It was, you know, we're trying to give people like give as many places Christmas as possible. So shows like that and like The Grinch, that can really only exist as like a one-nighter kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so we never had to like sleep on buses or anything, which was nice.
That's definitely nice.
Yeah. But it was very much like pack up and go. Like we had like one bus and our crew was on it. And so if we were traveling directly to our next city after a show, we couldn't like leave until the crew was done loadout. So like you could volunteer to help with loadout. And I was like, I know what this is. Like after working with like The Rev, and then I grew up doing shows at Hedgerow Theater. And so I was very involved with like scenery, moving around and things like that, even as a kid. And then Summer Stage, Young People's Theater Workshop, like I always had to be involved with like
the tech side of it. Yeah.
And I was like, let me just help you. And so like I was part of like the loadout crew for that tour.
That's nice. And that's also like crazy to think, just like it's constantly like place to place to place. So it's maybe not as much of the like exploring your city as much, I feel like, on tours that are truncated like holiday tours. But I'm sure they're also like had their wonderful ups and downs like you'd had with other tours. So another question that I had come in, what is your favorite role you've performed and what is your dream role?
Christopher in Curious Incident was both of those. people have asked me this recently. I'm like, I don't know what I want to do next. I'm at a point where I don't look 15 anymore. Unless like it's a really big theater, I'm far away. I'm not quite at like playing a dad yet. I'm still feeling out like where I currently fall as far as like for existing material roles that are appropriate for me, and things that I feel are right for me to be doing. I've been more selective as far as like where I've submitted and what I've submitted for recently. And so that's kind of narrowed down, you know, how often I'm working. And also the type, like making the decision, like, I don't think I'm going to do this kind of thing anymore. So that's kind of crossed off. Yeah. I have not delved into the world of Shakespeare. I did a production of Midsummer, but like as a dancer when I was like 18. And then even in college, like I tried to get out of doing Shakespeare in class. Like I was like, look, we both, I think we know I don't want to do it. So like, what if I just didn't do it? And my professor was like, no. And I was like, okay, well, okay. But like now
you're like, now, maybe.
Now I should probably like crack open. This is literally sitting on top of my Riverside right now. And so I'm like, maybe I should crack it open and read the complete works. but I think that's something I might start looking into.
Yeah. And I think with so many amazingly wonderful, like modern or variation of adaptations of them, or like different amazing concepts of them, you might find some really fun roles in there that I think you would have a really fun time playing.
Absolutely. Oh yeah.
And then one more Instagram question. Are you only an actor or have you also written and directed any theater?
So I, besides Broken Toe, Band, Troubled Paul, and Spring Fever, which were all done in my basement slash backyard with Melanie Schaefer, I collaborated and wrote a piece called Query in college that included a lot of like my experiences of like coming out and just relationships. And then that was revived in the Global Equality Forum sometime later. And then I have music directed. I worked with Music Theater Philly, where I was music directing and working with kids on material. And we did a very short half hour version of Wizard of Oz. Nice. But while I've done like a number of like run crew and like spot up and other sort of positions, I have not directed anything yet.
Yeah. Maybe that's in your future. Who knows?
I don't know.
You're like, I don't know. We're just taking it as it comes.
But try everything one time, you know?
Exactly. And kind of along those lines, but not quite. You also have a podcast, which is doing very well. It's called Pipe and Drape Stories. So when and how did it get started?
When I was working on Curious Incident, sorry to talk about this 47 times, I was living with one of the interns at the theater, and he had like a big book collection, and one of them was hashtag so blessed, where the whatever their Twitter name was at annoying actor friend or yes. actor friend.
Yes.
And he wrote this book that's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek view on equity regional houses around the country and like the New York audition scene and culture. And I'm reading it, and I'm coming from a perspective of a non-equity performer who has done a lot of theater for young audiences. And I was like, you know, people don't talk about TYA. Like they just don't. And I've had so many experiences and I've grown into adulthood bringing theater to kids. And I've the way I've traveled, like, you know, everyone said to me, like, travel while you're young. And it's like, okay. And so I did it, but while bringing theater to kids. And I'm like, this is a whole thing that I think a lot of people in the theater industry are afraid to talk about or afraid to do because they think it makes them less of a performer or right. or whatever. And, you know, it has its good and bad. I've made money doing it. There are some companies that don't pay very well. There's some living situations that aren't great. There are some tours that are phenomenal there, and you meet amazing people and you're like doing a mosh pit in Linkin Park in Chicago. Like
yes.
wonderful things that have happened to me because of Theater for Young Audiences. And I knew I could not be the only one. Like I've met so many people through this industry, like at like theater conferences and doing other shows that have done these tours. I'm like, let's talk about it. Let's have the conversation no one wants to have for some reason. So
yeah.
I took out a book, How to Start a Podcast, or So You Want to Start a Podcast.
Nice.
And I'm like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to like do it. I figured out like, all right, how would we structure this kind of like interview thing? I got recording equipment, one of these microphones. I have two. One is from my friends, Mel and Ellen, who are lovely and asking, oh my God, Blue Yeti twins. And I started interviewing people I was close to who had done theater for young audiences professionally. And that started growing. And I've started to talk to people who I don't know. I've had people reach out to me and like, yes, oh my God, let's talk about it. And so it's been really nice to share these experiences with other people and then have other people listen so they know what's happening in these school gymnocafetoriums. It's happening everywhere. And most people who have done theater saw that growing up. And so it's nice to hear from the people that are giving back in that way. And so I've been going, I'm releasing season two right now. and it's been really fun to connect with the community in this way. And Zoom has been great for that because I can record remotely while people are on contract or I'm on contract or whatever. And it's been a really fun time.
That's really awesome. And it's so amazing to hear about that because I mean, I was definitely one sitting in like a gymnocafetorium being like, whoa, these people are like doing this thing and like traveling and doing all this other stuff. And so I think it's something that's not nearly talked about as much. Like when I went to college, like no one really talked about doing like theater for young audiences in terms of like you can make a career out of it and like doing things of that nature. So I think it's really awesome that you've put together this podcast and that you're talking to people and creating that community. What has been your favorite aspect of putting together your podcast?
I mean, I like, obviously I love connecting with everyone. Some people who, I recently interviewed, Chris Luner, Wagner alum, who I met doing Upper Darby Summer Stage. So it's been really cool. So for those listening, Chris Luner grew up doing Summer Stage, was like a part of the staff for a long time and is now the artistic director. Yeah. And that was like, I was like, thank God. Oh my God, this is such a good deserving person to have this job. Especially like he has worked on and off Broadway. Like he's bringing so much to this. It's so exciting. So the chance to like get him still for a moment to talk about that and his experience working in New York has been really nice. I think this has also helped me reflect on what I'm doing and my goals as a performer. Mm-hmm. I went into this, people asked me like, why do you like theater? Someone asked me this in an interview when I was like 10, I had just been called back. I auditioned for a movie and it was like Edie Huggins like pulled me like, and she was like, why do you like doing like acting? And I was like, oh my God, I don't know. I was going to be at camp this morning, but now I'm in this film audition. Camp to me was like, it's the opportunity to live as many lives as possible. Mm-hmm. In some way live in different scenarios. I think each show, when my whole heart is in it, gives me a different feeling where I can like think back to lines or music and it takes me somewhere. Yeah. And so doing this podcast has helped me to remember that, especially because when theater becomes, when it becomes your livelihood, when it's how you're paying bills, it's different. It's different than, you know, I look at it a little differently than I did when I was doing it for fun as a kid. Yeah. But having these conversations has reminded me of why I like to do this. So selfishly, that's what it's been a huge help to me in like really evaluating like why I personally love storytelling. And then also just thinking about what it does to the community and how it brings people together and how we do have the power to help shape how people think, especially at a very young age. Yeah. And just little subtleties in staging, costuming, and casting can make a huge difference.
100%. And I relate so much to what you were just saying, because like even in developing this show, Overtures, and getting to talk to fellow theater artists and like reminding yourself, oh, right, this is why we do this. This is why we love this thing, love storytelling so much. So I think that definitely speaks to me, and I'm sure it speaks to so many. So people definitely need to go check it out. Do you have any favorite conversations or moments with previous guests that stick out for you?
Oh God.
You talked about Chris Luner, but do you have some other ones?
Oh no, I'm picking favorites.
No, that's so bad. No, maybe not favorites, but like ones that just like stick out.
I interviewed I interviewed for the first season my friend Allison Liney, who is a dancer in the Philadelphia area. We met doing Summer Stage, and there is just something about the way she performs, and she is like the physical storyteller and dancer. And so hearing her talk about like her experience and like someone that I like look up to as a performer, yeah, and talking about like her bringing shows on the road was just like so, so nice, and like doing this beautiful show. And I don't know, I think maybe I'm just picking favorites because I really like her. I don't know.
No, that's okay.
And then actually coming up, so if you're listening live, in September, my mom is on my podcast.
Oh.
Was going to be a dinky episode, like a 10-minute thing of just talking about bringing kids to the theater. Like, we ended up talking for 90 minutes about this. And I was like, this is going to be a full episode. And so my mom is a kindergarten teacher. And so I was like, wait a minute. Okay, I'm interviewing like people, professionals who are bringing theater to kids. How about the people who are bringing their kids to the theater as part of the curriculum? Like, so much happens in the classroom before and after the play. It ended up being this conversation about like, what are the conversations you're having with kids about like prepping them for the show, or like seeing the impact the show has on kids, and you know, like what theater does for children. It's so that was a really nice conversation. Also, I love my mom. So like,
no, that sounds like such an amazing episode. And I'm personally very excited to now listen to it when it comes out in September. That's so amazing. And it's crazy because we've kind of pretty much come to the end of this episode here on Overtures. Where can people find you on the internet, social media, all that good stuff?
So I encourage everyone to take a listen to Pipe and Drape. You can listen to all 16 episodes, full-length interviews and dinkies from season one and the season two that I'm rolling out. You can find more information at Pipe and Drape Stories on Instagram. That will take you to a link to the podcast on major streaming platforms. You can find my personal page at Stephen in Disguise on Instagram. That's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. And I'd say those are the best two places that you can find out what I'm up to.
Amazing. Perfect. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Laura_Marjoram. I also have a website, www.lauramarjoram.com. There's a little tab for Overtures, so you can find episodes there as well. You can find this show on Instagram at Overtures Show. That's where you can find out all the latest updates as to who's coming on next. You can submit questions. It's a grand time, so go follow. And also, you can find us on YouTube at Overtures Show. So make sure you subscribe, follow, join us live, send questions live. It's so exciting to know that there's a live audience joining us when we have these episodes. And then I'm starting to roll out the backlog on Spotify and Apple Music. So go check that out. Links to those pages are in my Instagram highlights. Steven, do you have any final thoughts for viewers live and in the future?
You guys, go out and live life, because you can do what you want on stage, but life is out there. Ooh. Go live it.
Yes, yes. And with that, I hope everyone has an amazing day. And thank you guys for tuning in.